Welcome to PMA Takes on Tech, the podcast that explores the problems, solutions, people, and ideas that are shaping the future of the produce industry. I'm your host, Bonnie Estes, Vice President of Technology for the Produce Marketing Association, and I've spent years in the ag tech sector. So I can attest, it's hard to navigate this ever-changing world in developing and adopting new solutions to industry problems. Thanks for joining us and for allowing us to serve as your guide to the new world of produce and technology. My goal of the podcast is to outline a problem in the produce industry and then discuss several possible solutions that can be deployed today. Stout Industrial Technology collaborates with customers to build and launch industrial technology solutions that are designed to last. The Smart Cultivator combines a proprietary, agriculturally proven mechanical platform with Stout True Vision technology to eliminate weeds and cultivate ground in a single pass. Visit stoutagtech.com. That's stoutagtech.com to learn more. Welcome to this episode on AgTech in Israel. I've been doing these episodes based in different regions. I've done them for Brazil, South Africa, Australia, and last week, Singapore. It varies how difficult it is to get the right people on Zoom and produce an episode. It mostly depends on my relationship with people. If I don't know people very well or at all, it can take up to 3 months to get 3 to 4 speakers. Well, Israel broke the mold on that. I know a few of the speakers from prior work, and they got back to me right away, and everyone had a suggestion of other people who should be on the podcast. So suddenly I had 8 people. Unless you are Tim Ferriss, no one is going to sit through a 2-hour podcast. So I decided to do 2 episodes on Israel. I think this can be attributed to both the amount of ag tech coming out of Israel that everyone knows everyone else due to the size of the country, and just how outgoing and willing to talk people are in Israeli ag tech. So get ready for an exciting episode about an exciting region. Israel has long been famous for growing food in the desert and inventing cherry tomatoes. Its current agricultural achievements are no less impressive, and dozens of innovative ag tech and now food tech startups are developing innovative solutions for the world. Precisely because Israel is a small country with relatively few natural resources of its own, it has stressed the development of forward-thinking, highly advanced agricultural solutions. In this episode, we will hear from a great variety of experience and technologies. First, Oded Distel will talk about his time at the Ministry of the Economy and Industry and also his new startup with a solution for water shortages. Oded gives a great overview of how government helps the growth and success of the ag tech sector in Israel. We will also hear from Ohad Zuckerman, Managing Director at Copia Agro and Food Technologies Fund. After Ohad, we will hear from 2 companies with great solutions for the produce industry. So let's get started with the conversations. We have with us Oded, and I want to talk to you about your company, but also I want to talk to you about your time with the Ministry of Economy and Industry. And so you've had a very long career in both on the commercial side and also on the government side. And so you're uniquely positioned to talk about what's happened in Israel in technology and in agriculture. So why don't you start just telling us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Sure. Hi, Bonnie. So first, pleasure being here with you here today. I'm a follower of the podcast, and it's a great pleasure to be talking to you today. So as you said, I had a long career in the Israeli government, seeing things from the macro point of view, looking at the industries, water industry, the agro industry from that perspective. And recently, about a year and a half ago, I left the government after 23 years there, moved to the private sector, and I'm the CEO now of Talia, a small agro company. The transition is fascinating. looking at things from a totally different point of view now. And I like it. Makes my life interesting.
Great. Yeah, that is different, the different types of things that are necessary to run a commercial company. This episode, I'm focusing on agritechnology development in Israel and how the ecosystem has evolved. From your background, it looks like you've had a big hand in developing the ecosystem through bringing foreign investors and support from multinationals. So please talk to us about your work at the ministry and how that's helped AgTech.
Yeah, so, you know, when you talk about technology, so everybody immediately think about the tech side. New stuff, cool stuff, algorithms, automation, and on and on and on. And usually people ignore the fact that in order to bring a technology to full implementation to the market, it takes a huge effort from the entire ecosystem to work together in order to make it happen. And the ecosystem concept means that we work together with all the different players, the government, the regulators, the investors, the academia, startups, NGOs, obviously farmers, water utilities, and on, and try to bridge the gaps between all those different players, which is relatively a very tough challenge. In Israel, we have a lot of things that play in our favor. One, obviously, the place is small. So yeah. It's really easy to get around and to interact and to meet the people almost on a daily basis. So if I my office was in Jerusalem at the ministry, but I could be there in the morning and then go to Tel Aviv for a meeting and end up in Jerusalem back in the evening for a meetup. And same goes with the Be'er Sheva and Haifa, and the entire country is in a distance of a few hours of driving. Which means that you are able at the end of the day to say, okay, I know the ecosystem. Meaning I know the people, not something theoretically. Yeah. I know that I have everybody on my iPhone. You know, it's speed dial to almost all the CEOs of the companies and the main researchers in the academia. And I can ask questions and get answers immediately and connect the dots in no time, which I think is pretty different to a large country like the US or even a medium-sized country or relatively big compared to Israel, like Italy or France or whatever. Second, it's the local culture in Israel, which people tend to interact a lot. Relatively warm, open culture, and we have a lot of opportunities to interact as well. So there is the army service that everybody mingles together, the university, you know? So the ability to bridge those gaps between groups is much easier in Israel compared to other places. And eventually the fact that we didn't have any other choice. We had to come up with solutions to those challenges because we simply could not do otherwise. So we had to come up to solutions to water challenges. We had to grow food in a desert. We had to come up with processes that would allow us to use to do much more with less resources. So all those combinations together created a very dynamic society and culture that pushes forward all those concepts of innovation, of thinking out of the box, of trying to do something, fail, and try again until you make it. So I would say the combination of all those elements together created this interesting place that brings a lot of innovation in agriculture, in water, in medical, in cyber, in whatever.
So a lot of the things that are developed in Israel, like you said, it is a small country. I mean, and you do have a lot of agriculture there, but it's not a big country. So when companies are formed, do they form with the idea that they're going to need to go global, that they'll need to be global companies? Is that in the thinking of the formation?
Sure, from day one. And sometimes it's, people exaggerate because they would start a company and the two founders would argue if they want to go IPO in London. You know, they didn't do anything yet, but they find something to argue about. So the answer but is definitely yes. Everybody looks at the local market as a test bed, as a pilot place, play around in the sandbox, and at a very early stage, move globally. Obviously, the fact that the world is so close now, even the time of Corona, you could be in a conference in the morning in India and then end up in somewhere in Chile afterwards with a Zoom call. So, and it's quite common in the Israeli culture for some time now to be very globally, to interact with different cultures, languages, people from all over the world. So a long answer to say big yes.
Hmm. And with the financing, I mean, I know a number of the ag tech VC companies that are here in the States have made investments in Israeli companies, even very early stage. And is that normal? Does the financing often come from outside the country, or do you have a lot of venture capitalists and private money that goes into companies in Israel, or both?
So the VC industry in Israel started somewhere in the 90s. It's a very interesting story because it's one of those cases where the government did something positive.
Yay!
Yeah. And we keep coming back to this story. Is very happy with it. So somewhere in the early 90s, the government identified that there are a lot of startups and entrepreneurs, that the lack of financial resources is the main obstacle that prevent them from growing. And the government initiated a program where it said to the private sector, we'll put a bucket of money, you'll manage the investment. And in some time, we the government will give you the private sector the option to buy us out. And then it started. So there were at the beginning five small VCs that were partially owned by the government and the private sector, but the private sector was the one to manage it. Make the long story short, it was a huge success. At a certain point, the private sector bought out the government, and the VC industry went on from that point, going very fast forward. So at the present, the VC industry in Israel is local VCs, foreign VCs represented in Israel, Israeli VCs that raise money from abroad, mostly US, Canada, but recently also a lot of money is coming from Asia, China, India, Japan, etc. And obviously the recent trend is a lot of interest from the Gulf, from the United Arab Emirates that we see, and also Europe. Not to forget Europe. So it's a very competitive, interesting market. And you'll hear different things, you know, from the point of view of the startups. You'll hear that the VCs are very conservative and they don't take risk and they don't invest enough and they look for the easy investments and they don't go to very early stage, etc. From the VC side, you'll hear not enough options, not enough companies, and on and on. But I assume it's the same discussion you hear in the Silicon Valley and you hear in London and in all those centers of innovation. And usually it's a game. Sometimes you have a lot of competition over the money, and sometimes money is competing over cool startups.
Interesting. So what do you think that the ecosystem needs to continue and grow and prosper in Israel? Is there anything, I mean, it sounds like you've got money coming in from a lot of different places. You've got government support. Is there anything missing or anything you'd like to see different to keep things growing as fast as it has been?
So the government also has an important role and the government has to interfere, or not to interfere, but to be a partner where I would say the other different players would see a more narrow point of view, more narrow angle, and the government has to have a broader perspective of things. And in a way, this is what I did when I was in the ministry. We have created, or we have foster this ecosystem around the water technologies, and the same concept was then implemented in other sectors, including agriculture. So I'm a very strong advocate for this concept of working in ecosystem and providing the opportunities for the entrepreneurs to interact with regulators. And you know, it is fascinating because you realize that they speak different languages.
Mm-hmm. They can end up talking past each other, right?
Amazing. Yeah. We had a meetup and we called it a regulator on the bar. We brought the important regulators from the Water Authority, from the Ministry of Health, Ministry of Environment, to meet Israeli water startups. And at a certain point, I realized that I need to interfere and translate in the language of the regulator and the language of the entrepreneurs, because they did not speak the same language. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they speak Hebrew, but it was not the same language.
Yeah.
So I you know, the if you give the regulator the only opportunity to meet a startup when they have to take a very bold decision to allow a new cool technology to enter the market, and they have tons of responsibility on their shoulders, and they have to take it all upon themselves, the chances that they are going to be strong enough to take a courageous decision is not big. But if they have met the entrepreneur a year before and they have interacted with him, and maybe they went to see a small pilot that the guy had in the university, and you know, they build confidence and they build a trust relation, the chances that at a certain point this guy might say, okay, I feel that I'm on the safe ground, I can take a little bit more risk with this technology, is much greater. And in a way, this is the idea. Same goes with investors and with NGOs, and to be able to connect all those players. And going back to your question, what is in a way missing now? So the fact that so many sectors are now competing over specific capability or specific talent, that has to do a lot with the data and the data scientific and on, makes those people being torn in different sectors. Financial sector wants them at the health sector, agriculture, transportation, energy, and on and on. So the idea is, how do we open the door and let a lot of new talent and people from other sectors that were not yet in the game until recently? In the Israeli case, it would be the Arab community, in the ultra-Orthodox, and let those guys come in and play in this wonderful field that we all like so much.
Yeah, I think that's true for the United States as well, is that, you know, just bringing, sometimes agriculture isn't the most exciting in people's minds if they didn't grow up around it. And so, you know, how do you get talent, both people who live in the U.S. and how do we bring people from other places? Because, you know, we have a shortage of that talent as well, you know, because there's so much need in that area. So let's switch a little bit to your company. And as you've mentioned several times, water scarcity is a very big issue in Israel and becoming more so worldwide. And so what attracted you to go into the private sector, and tell us about the company and your product?
Perfect. So after 23 years in the government, which was a fascinating ride, and, you know, as I told you, I did something that I felt like I had a startup inside the government, which is, you know, totally crazy thing, but it was really inspiring and challenging and very interesting, for sure. And then at a certain point, I felt that, okay, enough. I want to do something different. I want to do something totally different. And then, you know, from my position, I knew, I told you, almost everybody in the water, in agriculture, in energy. And there was this small company that I knew for some years that I was totally in love with the concept, with the technology. And it was still at the stage where it was a big promise, but did not yet deliver. And then I said, okay, this is my, this is the mission. This is something I want to take forward, take a very small company with a very simple technology. I mean, Talia, what we do, we create ideal microclimate to the root zone of young trees. And by the way, we call the product, we call it Mitra, which is a wound in Greek.
Oh.
Yeah. And you know, this is the way, this is exactly the way we look at what we do to those very young trees. Like, we are like a mother taking care of of her young babies. So the challenge here is, and it's a, you know, technology works. Agronomically, we know it works. We tested it. And the beauty of it is that it works in a holistic way. It saves water, it prevents weeds, it mitigates extreme weather conditions, it protects the soil, it takes care of soil health, soil erosion, and on and on. So we're doing all this beautiful stuff in an extremely simple way, because we work with nature. So, or nature works with us, you know, it's a partnership. So this is the journey that I choose to take after leaving the government. So from this huge, big, very bureaucratic, monstrous organization, all the way to something extremely small. And this is the challenge, and I love it.
It's fascinating. I looked on your your website, and there's a video that shows, and it's very infrequent that you see a video that really, without words, it completely explains the product and how it works. And so that's really well done, and really shows what the product can do. What geographies are you in right now, and kind of what's the state of rolling this product out?
Great. So in agriculture, as you know, maybe better than myself, things take time. So it is a slow process to introduce a new product to the market. So we are working in India, and in India we have a collaboration and partnership with the very strong local players. So it is Tata Trust and Tata Coffee and Syngenta Foundation. And those organizations are aiming at improving dramatically the smallholders segment and increase their income. And because Talia and Dimitras are very modular, meaning we can be implemented in an extremely large orchard in California or Australia, and we are totally relevant for a smallholder with maybe 1 acre it is behind his house. So we work in India, and we had some extremely nice pilots there growing tomatoes and some kind of a local zucchini, Indian zucchini, with wonderful results. And we are now moving to the next stage. We have a very nice pilot in New Mexico with the New Mexico State University.
That's where I went to school.
Ah, nice. wonderful people. such a joy working with them. Professor Manu Shukla is running this pilot. So it is with the pecan trees, and we learned that pecans are great, has great place in the local economy in New Mexico, and at the same time they have a very serious issue with water shortage. Mm-hmm. Take a lot of water. So the promise that we made is very, very attractive. The only problem, again, it's going to take time to get results. So this is New Mexico. We are working in Mexico and in Australia with vineyards. Different geographics. We are looking for the where situation is tough. Where things are tough, then our contribution is significant.
Great to hear that broad perspective of what is happening in Israel. Now we will move to hear how investing is working in Israel at Copia Agro and Food Technologies Fund with Ohad Zuckerman. Copia invests in agricultural and food technology projects in Israeli R&D institutes and by hands-on management and in cooperation with strategic partners that bring them to maturity. Copia has several interesting business models on getting technology to market quickly and less costly. Ohad has a great background in management and international business with a long career in ag and food, which gives him a great eye as to what they should invest in and develop. Please tell us about yourself, your background, and Copia Agro and Food Technologies Fund.
Sure. So I'm 57 soon in July. And Copia is my third career. I started working in a family company, a seed family company that my father founded back in the 50s. It's called Zerayim Gedera. It was actually purchased, acquired first by a fund, a private equity fund here in Israel, and then by Syngenta. It's now part of Syngenta. Then I moved to aquaculture. And I initiated a company that deals with microalgae. Today, the company has a face mask for microalgae, starting to do all the commercialization. And Copia is my third and hopefully last career. This is really an amazing fund. We have great achievements so far. I meet amazing people every day. I'm an agronomist by profession and my business, and I have a business degree, a joint degree from Tel Aviv University and the Kellogg School of Business from Northwestern. And actually these two things of agriculture and food and business come together in Copia. And the good thing about Copia is that it's not just making money, it's really an impact fund that also tries to do something good with the money.
So what does being an impact fund mean to you? What, how do you act differently than if you weren't an impact fund? And how does that color your investments and how you look at different businesses?
Okay, so first of all, Copia invests in agriculture and food technologies that do something good to the food supply chain, from the genetics to the plate. We're trying to improve the sustainability by mitigation of climate change and food safety and food security. And so all our technologies are doing something that either changes from chemicals to biologicals, or improving the processes of food production, or improving the shelf life and the quality of food, and things like that. And we talk not about the fruits and vegetables, but also on livestock, welfare, for example, about fish production. So we are really involved in all aspects of food. And the impact is really to increase sustainability by replacing products or enhancing processes and enhancing, of course, yields and productivity. Another thing as an impact fund, and this I think is very, very interesting, doesn't have to do anything with technologies. We invest in two main avenues. The main avenue that we invest in is in technologies originating from Israeli research organizations and universities. We find technologies that have passed the proof of concept stage. We team up with companies from the relevant verticals, and we transform these technologies into products that could be sold or processed that could be implement and improve sustainability. And of course, this is done in a very serious way. We create a team between us, the research team in the research organization or university, and the company that is doing the development and commercialization later on. So we finance the research part, and the companies do the in-kind investment by funding all the development and commercialization. In addition to that, we also invest in startups, and the startups are all more into development than research, but they complete our portfolio. So that's one thing that we do from the impact point of view. Another thing, which is very interesting, that if you look at the technologies in which we invest in research institutions, about 60-65% of the technologies are led by women researchers. However, when you go to the startup world, it's completely ruled by men, 99%. Yep. Yeah. And, you know, people talk about gender equality, and this is something that I personally believe, that gender equality in life will come from gender equality in business. So this is already now the second year that Copia initiates and manages a competition for women entrepreneurs in agriculture and food. And the second competition is going to take place on June 6th. It's going to be live in the internet as well. And I think this is another aspect of the impact that we're trying to do as a fund, not only by the technologies in which we invest, but also the way that we do business and the way that we promote the industry.
That, I really love hearing that. I'm speaking on a panel in a couple of hours about women in agriculture. And so I've been doing some research and just looking at, you know, what it looks like in the startup world. This is in the US and this is across all startups, but we're going backwards. You know, this 2020 has been a bad year for women in business, period. But this year in 2020, 2.3% of the startups funded were women founded, down from 2.8%. So we're a little better than 99% men, but not far. So you have to do it on purpose. So I love that you're really paying attention to that. And that's really exciting. That's great. The other thing that struck me in what you said is the part of pulling technologies out of universities. I think that's really interesting. It's kind of like the flagship model here in the US, flagship pioneering, where they look for technologies and then build a team around it. And it's a very different model. Have you found that to be equally successful to the, you know, startup entrepreneur model, or is it just a whole different model?
I think it's much more efficient, because if you're a startup and you want to establish a company, you need to invest huge amounts of money, millions of dollars, in building a team, getting by, you know, laboratories, making trials, doing formulations, go to registration. All these things are they cost a huge amount of money. If you go to our model, the research is done by the institutions that they are very well equipped and they have amazing teams there. The development and commercialization is done by companies that have all the facilities, all the know-how, all the market knowledge, and they do the other part of the equation. So if you're able to connect these two and to create a fluent process, then you save huge amounts of money and you're much more efficient, because the best people in every domain do what they have to know. The researchers do the research, the companies do the development and commercialization, and we are doing the connection. Usually these two entities, business and academia, do not speak the same language. Yeah. Just to give a simple example, take the issue of IP. Researchers usually are promoted because they publish articles. When they publish, you cannot write a patent. So there is always an issue: when to publish, should we publish, what will we publish? And so this is something that always creates tension. If you know how to handle it, and you create a win-win business. So we speak both languages. We know how to speak with researchers. We know how to speak with the industry. And this is, and we created a smooth process, and we know exactly how to differentiate between R and D, to create a very, very coherent process. So basically, it's more efficient, both financially and also from the operational point of view. So far, we have 26 investments in 8 different organizations here in Israel. And in addition to that, we also have 2 startups. So altogether, 28 investments in the fund. So we have 6 project leaders, people that are industry professionals, freelancers, that work on an hourly basis plus success fee. And they manage clusters of technologies like crop protection, food quality, aquaculture, genetics, etc. And they report to us. And this way, our span of control is very well kept and managed. So that's a unique model. We don't really build startups around the technologies, but we create cooperation with the industry, and we act as a bridge between academia and industry, and it works fantastically.
Oh, I see. So you're not forming a company necessarily around the technology, but you're bringing the technology to companies that already are involved in that space.
Yes and no. We do establish a special purpose company for every technology, which is the vehicle through which we make the investment in the research institution, and we do all the business development with the academic, with the industrial partners. So there is a special purpose company for every technology, and this is the way we manage it.
I see. So how do you see, you've been really involved in the ag tech ecosystem, and just in the time that I've known you, that it certainly has changed and grown. So how do you see the ag tech ecosystem has grown in Israel in the last 5 years?
Okay, so first of all, we have a lot of startups, much more startups than we had in the last like 5 years ago. More food tech than ag tech. Yes.
Ag tech ones, I guess. So I've seen so.
I think even though we do have enough ag tech, there is a lot of food tech, and the growth is mainly in food tech. And I think that the majority, if not all of them, address the happy and the not so hungry world, while the ag tech companies do also address both the hungry world and the not hungry world. So from my point of view, first of all, there are many more companies. Second, more funds. And in Israel specifically, there is a new vehicle for investment, which is called R&D partnerships, which enables institutional investors to invest in public entities that invest in startups. So they do not invest directly in the startups, they invest in the R&D partnership, and through this, they get involved in small companies, because they will not move for $10, $20 million. They will move for much more than that. In addition to that, the last thing is that you see more MNCs, more multinational companies coming to Israel directly. They have representations here, they do scouting here, they invest here, and they are doing a lot of good work helping the startups to focus more on what the industry really needs. So these are the main four things that I can tell you that happen. More companies, more investment vehicles, and more MNCs, and partnerships, which is a new thing.
So what technologies in the ag tech side do you see that are the most industry interesting and promising right now?
Well, I think that there are a lot of things that are going on. I cannot tell you on one thing which is specific, because usually these are trends. And it's difficult to talk about trends because if you listen to the same interview 2, 3, 4 years down the road, maybe what you hear is old fashioned already. So I think that I would like to address something which is from our point of view as a fund that deals with a lot of projects and technologies is important. When we go to change from the chemical to biologicals products, okay, let's talk about, for example, crop protection or enhancement of quality of fruits and vegetables and things like that, then we come into the issue of formulations. And the formulations are something that big companies usually used to do. And slowly, when the startup started to go into the business, then they found the need to do that. And today you have companies that specialize in formulations. This is something that is really missing in the industry. The expertise of creating formulations for biomaterials, I think this is very important. So that's one thing that I would like to be to point out. However, if you talk about trends, I would say that in food, it's all the protein substitutes, both plant-based or cultured meat. Mm-hmm. And when you talk to, and when you speak about agriculture, it's precision agriculture. Mm-hmm. So if you talk about protein substitutes, I think that plant-based is here, okay? It's a matter of taste and honesty whether you think it's the same or not. That's one thing. The second thing is the cultured meat. It will take time. However, I think it's important. Nevertheless, until it's there and commercially available and affordable, people still need to look at the real meat producers and not neglect them. I think it is important, even though we're an impact fund and we look at the environment, still, there is a world that you need to feed, and it will take time until the real meat substitutes like cultured meat will be affordable and commercially available for everybody. So regarding agriculture, I think that precision agriculture is a buzzword. And here, again, I've got some things to say. I think that it's really nice to see the way that high tech comes into ag tech. However, I met many, many companies, and each one tells me that they will increase the yield by 15% to 20%. So let's take two or three like that, or let's even take five. So the poor plant will have to bear more and more and more fruits, because if each one is right, then it's going to multiply the fruit. So it's ridiculous. It's impossible that everyone will do that the same time. So first of all, it's very difficult to measure the incremental real contribution of every technology. That's one. Second, due to that, it's very difficult to create a business model that is real and affordable to the grower and also good enough for the company. And the third thing is, think about the poor grower that gets 20 notices to his cell phone, from one in irrigation, one in fertilization, one in crop protection, one in weather, one in like this and one in like that. And he doesn't know what to do. So eventually, I think that two, three, maximum four players will be the ones that will purchase the best of breed from each one and unite them into one solution. And they integrate the knowledge and the understanding and will come with a daily recommendation or a periodical recommendation to the grower. And this will take time, but I think this is where the industry will go. So as investors, we are very careful and we're looking at this, and we still didn't find the one that really can unite all the inputs from all the small startups, that everyone has a wonderful solution. And we cannot still know how to measure precisely and to have a right business model for them. So I think that people are rushing into it without giving enough thought to it. But certainly it will happen. It's there. And I believe that eventually there will be three to four major suppliers of these technologies altogether to the farmer.
Yeah, of course we're seeing the same thing in the U.S. too. It's just you can see a grower with 15 different dashboards, and none of them speak to each other, and it's really difficult to really act on those decisions when everything's coming in separately like that. So I think it's really important that we find some platforms, that support all these different tools.
Just to tell you one thing, I think that if you look at our portfolio, there are few things that I think may be interesting to tell you about.
Okay.
First of all, one of our companies is called 2B, deals with the bees industry. As you know, the bees are disappearing.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a huge issue with the bees because they are the major pollinator of food crops. The main cause for the disappearance are viruses and a certain mite that causes direct damage and also transmits the vector of the viruses into the hives. It's called the varroa mite. And this is the number one problem of the bees industries, the bee industry. And one of our companies, 2B, has a solution to that. And we see this as one of our major contribution in the future to the industry as a whole. That's one. The second one is PostBoost, which it's a material that enables to enhance the color, the taste, and the shelf life of fresh fruits and vegetables. It's sprayed before harvest. It's an amazing material. And the last one, which I think is important, is breeding specialty items, personal melons, musk melons, that are going to be a personal size and with edible rinds and with soft seeds, so you can eat it as an apple.
Oh,
these are three very interesting things for the PMA members. And there are two more technologies, more on the production side, which I think are interesting. What is called Soil Fender. It's a replacement of all the chemical and not so environmental friendly crop protection materials that are used for soil disinfection before sowing and planting. This is an amazing material that doesn't harm the the microbiome in the soil, but it does kill weeds, noxious weeds, nematodes, and fungi. For example, also the Panama disease fungi by Fusarium. So this is an amazing product. Another one is called BADAP. It's to break the dormancy of buds of fruit trees. It's an amazing product, less toxic than Dormex, dramatically, not toxic actually, and safer, and also does a better job. We have very good trials in the States and in Mexico, and we believe this could be a very good product for American and South American growers. So this is just some examples of the things that we have in the fund that are very relevant to the agri-food industry.
Thank you for that. So if people wanted to find out more about the companies, is it are those listed on your portfolio page on your website?
Yes. I think that Superfruiter, the one with the melons, is not yet there, but all the others are there. And one more thing, you know, as investors on now, but in the past, I managed companies and I was, you know, working with investors and working in agriculture. I think that it's very important that when people go to raise money, they will have the right team in place, because investors invest in people. They do not invest in a technology or in a market, because technologies can change and markets can change and trends are trends. And it's very important to have a team. So the entrepreneurs usually come on by themselves, and we tell them, listen, you need to come with a complete team that eventually, or at least partial, that will show us that you understand what is needed and that you have the right team next to you. Because we do invest in people. Always a good idea with an excellent team will do much better than an excellent idea with a poor team. So as an investor, I can tell you that we do invest in people, and I hope that there will be more women in the people we invest in.
Next, you will hear from two companies in Israel that are using groundbreaking technologies to solve problems in the produce industry. Raviv Kula, founder of FruitSpec, provides yield estimates as a service based on hyperspectral machine vision technology. And then I will talk to Alad Mardix, president of Clarifruit, a company addressing food shrink with an automated QC platform. So tell me about yourself and your company, please.
So my name is Aviv. I'm a veteran in the high-tech industry for the last 22 years, mainly coming from communication, managerial role of product management, product marketing, marketing, sales, business development in the industry. About 4.5 years ago, I sat down with a friend of mine for the last 25 years, and we talked about hyperspectral technology, that we believe that the potential is only scratching the surface of being used. And we debated among ourselves what we can do with this technology. And Nir, my friend and now my co-founder, he's a citrus grower. And he said, look, we in the place that we live, there are many citrus growers, but Shachar, which is the third co-founder, and I keep asking ourselves, how do we know how many fruits we will have this year? And we thought of testing hyperspectral technology to solve this question. And we tried two different technology and failed. But then the third one was Eureka. We found the technology. We know how to see green fruits at the early stage of the season.
How long did that take, those trying the two things and then finding the one that worked? How long did that take?
since we're dealing with food, so it's you have a season and you have to squeeze everything.
That's agriculture.
And you have 2 months. You don't have much more than that.
Yeah.
It was about 3 months, 4 months. It was very difficult to get the equipment. But then, you know, once the third one was successful, I called my wife on my way back and I said, look, we have everything that we need. We're going to win the market. The technology was so profound that we can use it. And this is how we started FoodSpec.
That's a great story. So what kind of insights do you give your clients? And you're solving the problem of yield, right? That's what you're, the information that you're getting. And how do you work with clients and how do they get that information?
So we started, you know, with counting the number of foods, but then we found out that nobody cares how many foods they have. They speak about carton, they speak about weight, and not the number of foods. Of course, the number of foods is a fundamental component in this equation, but you need to know what the customer needs. And we found out first that the segment that we should target is the packing houses and not the grower, because the value that we can bring them is much higher. And then after solving the issue of how many fruits, we found out that this problem of not knowing how many fruits, it's actually lead to a much bigger problem of yield management. How do you manage the inventory of the fruits that you have in your orchard? What are the tools that you need in order to do that? And we found out that nobody is doing that. I mean, there are some ERPs in the packing house, but they are doing some invoicing, transportation, shipments, and so on. There are some farm management on the other side. They're doing the agronomy side of the business. But nobody is linking the orchard to the marketing. And we form... the marketing name is the Food Intelligence platform that we provide yield management to our customers, meaning accurate data on how many foods they have, what is the weight of the foods, what is the weight going to be by the end of the season, so how many carton per size they will be able to pack from each orchard. And on the aggregated level, what they will be able to sell, and we can provide this information in citrus varieties 6 to 7 months before picking, in apple stone fruits 3 to 4 months before picking. And this is crucial for the profit and top line for the packing house.
And it's a service, right? You don't have to sell anyone equipment. You go into the fields with your own equipment. That's how it works, right? Yeah.
Yes, exactly. In any territory that we are serving, we have a local team that have our systems, have our vehicle, and it's a service. So the customer does not have to bother with buying the system, learning how to operate it, and handling everything. We are coming, we scan, we go. The customer sees the results through the web portal. It's very transparent, this operation, to the customer.
And what other crops do you work in addition to citrus?
So we work in citrus, apples, stone fruits, grapes. We have plans to expand this year into continue with the packing house into berries, and some other food types, but also for tropical fruits. For we have a very innovative solution for bananas, yield management, pineapple, papayas. So we are expanding. The technology roughly is the same. I mean, as the same as the patent that that we got, but it is agnostic to any type of fruit. But the implication of how to do that and how to plan forwards is something that we have for any food type separately. And as I said, we're currently targeting for this year to go for bananas and pineapple tropical foods, but also expanding what we are doing to pomegranates, berries, and so on.
So it sounds like you're working outside of Israel then, if you're going into
tropical fruits. So what geographies are you in?
In Israel, the ethos of Israel is being agriculture, but the country is small, and there are not a lot of export coming out of Israel for fruits. So we look at it as a kind of a lab that we can test a lot of things that we are doing. This week, we done some cherries and berries over here in Israel. So we can test our equipment, our artificial intelligence models over here. And we are we have offices in the US, in California, the Central Valley, Chile, two offices in South Africa, one office in Spain. We have a minor operation in China. But this year, we're going to expand and open at least two other offices during this year.
Wow, that's a very wide spectrum. So this particular episode that I'm talking to people on is to kind of focus on Israel and what the ecosystem is like there and what it's like to do a startup there and the benefits. And so you live there and that's where you're from. So it makes sense that you would start a company there. But what's the ag ecosystem, the ag tech ecosystem like there? And has there been good access to funding and has it been a good place to start a company?
It's an ecosystem. It's not just a system. There are some communities that assist forming a company, knowledge, connection. In Israel, it's very wide and people do not hesitate to introduce you to either customer or to high-level connections. So it's very, I can call every day to 3, 4, 5 CEO of other startups and tell them, look, I have a problem over here. Can you, how do you solve it? Okay. Either financial or something that is specific to the domain that, that we are doing. It's very common to do that. So the ecosystem is very open and helpful. The access to funding, it's changing. I mean, from the day that we started the backlog in the end of 2016, which was very difficult and only a few funds or investors were available to invest really in ag space. Now it's a much more wider community, investors, and you can see the forming of big companies. Companies are going into the C and D rounds, you know, with 200 people, 500 people in a company. So the industry is maturing step by step.
So do most companies that start in Israel, most companies must start with the idea of this is a good place to start, but we have to be global for this company to make it. Is that kind of the thinking? Does anyone start and say, I'm an Israeli company and I'm going to serve the Israeli market? Or are most people thinking I'm going to be broader and be a global company?
I think that 100% are looking to be global. Mm. And I've got customers in the U.S. that have around 10,000 hectares. I mean, it depends. In acres, it's different. But the overall citrus bearing land in Israel is about 15,000 hectares. So in comparison, you need big customers and you need to prove your technology is working outside of Israel. Investors are looking for the international reference and not just it's working over here in Israel. Mm-hmm. I must say that the acceptance from the customer, from the client point of view, is quite the same. It's whether that you are a very small packing house or you are a huge packing house, they're always willing to hear what you are saying, understand and test it for sure. So it's not, Israel is not different from the rest of the world in terms of attitude toward ag technology. The scale is much lower.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, there's such a great education system there and amount of talent. You know, I've worked with a number of companies over the year, more on the biology side and agriculture, and it's just, you know, the universities are fabulous. And so there, it's a wonderful breeding ground for sure, you know, for these types of companies to then go global.
I'm Elad Maladix. I'm the president of Clarifruit. And together with my two partners, Avi and Ruby, we actually established Clarifruit about 3.5 years ago. And just maybe a word about how the idea came up. Clarifruit was born actually primarily through my partner, Avi, who's really the product visionary of the company. And he used to work for HP for about 10 years before establishing Clarifruit. And at HP, he actually ran on the R&D side the world's largest automatic testing product for the software world. Huh. He's also coming from a farming family background. And in about 2017, he had a very interesting observation. And the observation he had was that software and fresh produce are actually very similar. I know it may sound funny initially.
How that is.
There you go. If you think about it, both software and fresh produce are merchandise whose quality is changing on a daily basis. Oh. It's very unique, as opposed to an iPhone or a chip that's coming out from a foundry. And the minute it's being produced, the quality is fixed. It's very different for both software as well as fresh produce. Now, 20 years ago, HP has invented automatic testing for the software world because they recognized that the supply chain of software distribution was very inefficient and they needed to apply an automatic testing concept to this industry. Avi recognized that actually the fresh produce industry, which, as we all know, is a very long, complex, and inefficient supply chain, mm-hmm. will benefit enormously if there was an automatic testing concept applied to that supply chain. And that's really how the idea was born. Clarifruit has essentially developed an automatic quality control platform for the fresh produce industry. Essentially what it means is we developed software that has two components. Component number one is a mobile application that you can use on any smartphone that exists today in the market and actually allows you to perform a quality control inspection of your fresh produce in an automatic way through computer vision technology that we have developed and have patents on and some other integration that we have. And even more importantly, we have a web app, a management and analytic dashboard that generates in real time data and insights that really are not available today in any other platform.
So you have customers all along the supply chain. Can you tell us about your different customers and what problems you're solving for them?
Sure. So first, let's start actually, who is our target customer? So if you think about it, across the supply chain, from literally the grower down to the front store of the retailer, there are about 10 to 12 points today that people already perform a quality control inspection on a sample basis, right? Between whatever, 0.5 to 2% of the supply that's coming in, it's already being tested today, just in a very manual way with very limited data. What we're doing is automating this inspection process. And effectively, the entire supply chain who's performing those tests are going to be our customers. We started about 2 years ago going to the market and we focused on the marketing companies, the guys in the middle, the packer shipper mm-hmm. That works with all of their growers on the upstream and sell to the retailers and wholesalers downstream. Mm-hmm. And we have expanded in the last actually 6 months downstream to the wholesaler and the retailer segment. So today, we effectively work with the marketing companies downstream to the retailer. The pain point that we are addressing is multiple, and it also depends on the segment that we are interacting with. But if you think about it on a high level, the biggest pain point, and I'm talking dollars-wise, right? The biggest pain point is the rejections that are taking place in the supply chain. Mm-hmm. Based on information that we've seen, the average supplier in the market is suffering from about 7% financial loss as a result of rejections. And at the end of the day, the automation that we have with the AI and computer vision technology and the digitization that we're allowing, they are all tools. They are tools in order to do two things. Number one, help the supply chain to reduce the rejections that they are experiencing today. And number two, give them real-time data so they can make better decisions, like who is the right guy to sell to, where should they ship it based on shelf life prediction, and effectively help them maximize, I call it the wallet opportunity with the customers that they are interacting with.
That's a great amount of information that can really help things move through the supply chain much better. So which crops are you working on and focusing on? Just anything that moves through the supply chain, or are there particular crops that you've focused on?
Okay, so maybe I explain just before I go there, explain for a minute the solution that we offer. Our platform essentially can digitize any fresh produce category that exists in the market today. Digitize means that, let's say you are a retailer who has 275 fresh produce categories. We can essentially upload all of those categories on our platform. So you can digitize the entire quality control process and the quality standards that you are using, right? So your inspectors, wherever they are, don't need to actually use pen and paper, Excel, or in electronic form anymore. Everything is going to be performed through the mobile app. Now, we have developed our own computer vision technology to be able to analyze external attributes like size and color and stem color automatically through algorithm. We're just taking a picture from the smartphone. And this solution today is already commercially available for 10 produce categories. Started with table grapes, then we went with tomatoes, stone fruit, cherries, bananas and pineapples, as well as the citrus family and apples. So altogether, we have about 10 produce categories that are already automated. We're going to have 10 more added to that automation capabilities within 2021. And I expect that within the next 2 to 3 years, we'll get to the vast majority of the volume, which is about 45 produce categories.
Wow. So you truly are a global company working across the supply chain of wherever the food's going. Where in the world are your customers? What different regions are you working in?
So about 2 years ago, when we really started to go global, we actually, our first international customers was Gazex, or Hessex in Spanish, which is in Chile and is the world's largest exporter of stone fruits. One of the top five in grapes. So we started really in Latin America, and we have a very strong presence there today across Chile, Peru, and Mexico. We then expanded to North America, both in Canada as well as in US. But I would say that probably the strongest market for us has been Europe, where we work with multiple very big marketing companies as well as a retailer.
And do you have offices there, people on the ground in these different areas, or are you able to do it all from Israel?
So good question, because the answer would have been very different in March last year before the COVID. So today we actually have offices both in the Americas, North America and in Latin America, as well as in Europe. They usually, those offices include sales team, as well as operation team that essentially helps with the initial implementation. But what's interesting is that in the last year, especially between March to December in 2020, because of COVID, We worked with customers globally. And I'll mention just one of them. For example, we just started to work with Dole International. We're doing all of the QC for Dole's pineapples, bananas, and we'll do the other categories as well. And the entire implementation process for Dole, which took about 4 months, has been performed totally remotely. So we do have the local operations to honestly help close the loop quicker. But we have demonstrated the ability to actually implement very complex projects with very large customers in a total remotely way.
Mm. So this episode on the podcast is focusing on Israel, and there are an amazing number of ag tech and food tech companies that have started in Israel, and most of them are global. Why do you think that is? Why do you think it's such a good place to start companies, and why are there so many good companies that have launched there?
So I think the answer here is twofold. From a technology perspective, Israel is probably in the top two ecosystems in terms of technology entrepreneurial. Number one is probably the Silicon Valley, and Israel is right behind it. So Israel is a leader within technology, entrepreneurship, and development in any technology sector, right? Not necessarily agritech. Mm-hmm. This is a result of the nature of the people and the, I think, a lot of the culture-related attributes that people are growing into here. Specifically for the ag tech and fresh produce in our case, I think there is, to be honest, the local supply chain here, let's say within fresh produce, has a much higher or stronger propensity for technology adoption than you would usually find for other fresh produce players in the supply chain. So I just think it's easier to get your first couple of customers here, like the beta product, and check it with them and refine the product initially before you go out of the world. And people here also on the supply chain side would be receptive for errors and mistake, and they understand how it works. And that's I think the important underlying mechanism that enable new technologies to flourish out of Israel.
Oh, that's really interesting. I haven't heard that point of view before, but that makes a lot of sense. So, what new technologies do you think are still needed in the produce industry at this point, and do you see those being developed?
Yeah. So. You know, there's a lot of new technology that I can think of for the entire supply chain, obviously, but I'm going to focus on technologies which are related to the quality, which I think, again, quality is important in any business, right? But as I mentioned before, in the fresh produce supply chain, it's more important than anywhere else because the quality actually changes on a daily basis. So it's really tricky to be able to measure it. I think two things are very important that should happen over the next 3 to 4 years. Number one, I would like to see the digitization trend really taking off across the entire supply chain, not just in specific silos in the retailer, for example. It really needs to go across the entire supply chain. And we have seen, by the way, a huge acceleration of that since June last year. And the reason I think it's important to happen is because if we really want to be able to figure out the shelf life prediction accurately, right, in order to help in reducing the waste in this industry, the only way to figure out shelf life is by having a digitization and collaboration of data across the entire supply chain. One silo having the information is not going to do the work. So that's one thing that is really important. And I do see a bunch of other startups and companies attacking this digitization trend from different places. And I'm really hopeful that we're all going to be successful in convincing the suppliers and the retailers that this is going to create a lot of value for these guys. The second new technology that I'm hopeful will be relevant to the supply chain is hyperspectral technology. Okay, so If you remember, I mentioned that we developed our own computer vision technology to take pictures and analyze automatically external attributes. The technology that is it's being performed on is the cameras that we all have in our iPhone and Android devices. Mm-hmm. And it can only measure external attributes today, right? Including defects, but only external. The holy grail would be that you, Vani, will take a picture and it will be able to analyze not just the external attributes, but also the bricks or firmness, acidity, mm-hmm. pH, because then you're actually going to be able to analyze the entire quality of the fruit or vegetables and get a grade instantly. And when that happens, our technology is not going to be applicable not just to the professional supply chain from the farmer to the retailer, but also to the consumer. And I think when we get this hyperspectral technology, which by the way, already exists, it just costs between $15,000 to $20,000 per camera in the sorting machines.
Might need to get the cost down a little.
Well, but people are working on that. But I think it's probably going to be in the next 5 years when we start getting this technology into the camera of our smartphones. And at that point of time, the way it's going to play out is you're going to be able to pull up the Clarifoot app from your phone, go to the supermarket, and before you buy this blueberry or watermelon, you just take a picture and you'll get instantly the quality grade and the shelf life prediction. And that's going to be a whole game changer for the industry in mm-hmm. terms of waste reduction. But again, we're going to need hyperspectral technology to get to the smartphones. And that's probably 4 or 5 years away from us. So today we're focusing on the professional supply chain, automating the QC process with the combination of their industry devices like refractometer and durometer. But really, the vision is to be able to do it for everyone down to the consumer as soon as we can get this technology to the smartphones.
Wow, such wonderful conversations. As I mentioned at the start, I had so many exciting companies to talk to in Israel. I'm doing another episode. Look for the next episode to drop in a couple of weeks. That's it for this episode of PMA Takes on Tech. Thanks for allowing us to serve as your guide to the new world of produce and technology. Be sure to check out all our episodes at pma.com and wherever you get your podcasts. Please subscribe, and I would love to get any comments or suggestions of what you might want me to take on. For now, stay safe, eat your fruits and vegetables, and we will see you next time.